It's a week to Purim, Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, and I want to take a little bit of look at the Megillah tonight. Mention the fact that there was a style in which the Megillah was written. And that style was as if it were a Persian document. As it indicates at the very end of the Megillah, everything else which we haven't told you yet about Mordechai, So, basically, what that pasuk is telling us is that the Megillah is a synopsis of the Persian archives. And that's the way the Megillah is written, as if it's a Persian document. It doesn't mention Shem Hashem, as we mentioned. It gives Achashverosh a pretty free ride. The real action of the Megillah is beneath the surface, isn't the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebiksav is a very muted story. It's an important story, the Torah Shebiksav of it. And we read the basics, that Haman came and he wanted to assault the Jewish people and were in grave danger or were saved, etc. That's pashtus. But the real story, in its full depth, is only in the Torah Shebaal Peh. And it's interesting that they were careful at the very, very beginning, as they wrote this up, one has to read the Megillah carefully. And therein lies its depth. And right in the first pasuk, when Mordechai and Esther wrote the Megillah, they warned us not to be deceived or confused by that which we're going to read. And right in the first pasuk, Vayehi b'mei Achashverosh, the next words, Hu Achashverosh. What do we need the words Hu Achashverosh? Vayehi b'mei Achashverosh, Hamilech me'odu v'atkush. The words Hu Achashverosh, if you're reading perhaps in a secular account, doesn't mean anything, it's fine. A little poetic. But if you're reading in Kisvei HaKodesh, you understand Esther, but it's Esther Baruch HaKodesh, Nichtevo, then we don't have phrases like Hu Achashverosh. So right at the get-go, Mordechai and Esther warned us, as Chazal interpret, Rashi quotes it, he was the consistent Achashverosh, who berishom et chilosa v'atzaifei. The evil about him was throughout, unabiding. So right at the beginning of the Megillah, Mordechai and Esther have already warned us what type of character we're dealing with. Subtly. Don't be misled by the way we wrote it. Look a little bit more deeply. And then they also allude to something we'll come back to, which is really one of the primary aspects of the Megillah. Hamoylech should have said Vehibu Me'achashverosh Melech or Molach Mehodu Vatkush. But as Hamoylech, so Rashi tells us Shamolach Me'atzvelo Hoya Mizera Melucha. And this plays a very crucial part in the story. A very crucial part. Because this leads to all types of complications. It shows us, on one hand, how rash Achashverosh was. His whole claim to the throne was through Vashti, because Vashti was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. So how in the world do you kill her? You don't like her? So send her into exile someplace and put her in a palace with 20 attendants and leave her there and go take another wife and goodbye. That secures his future. He's married to Vashti. What do you kill her for? For what reason? Exile her. That's all. End of the story. But Ahasuerus was rash. He didn't think. And his advisors had perhaps their own agendas. But with all his advice, he acted very rashly. And this will play a very important part in the Megillah. This. And secondly, there's another underlying theme in this Megillah. It looks to me that there's machlokes and the Virian Chazal about this. In the Gemara, it seems that 127 Medinas encompass the entire known world of that time. There are Mefarshim on the Megillah who quote other Midrashim that until this time he had ruled over 240 Medinas, and now he had 127. Which tells us he lived in counter-revolutionary times. And that's what's suggested a little bit by the story of Bixen and Seresh, that there were constant plots against the king. And that HaMoylech increases that problem. Because after killing Vashti, he has no claim to the throne at all. So every king, and especially when it was Serb's power, wants to have a reasonable claim to the throne. But after killing Vashti, he no longer has any connection with the throne. So this only increases the peril that he's in. So these elements, his rashness and his peril, will play a very, very critical role in understanding what takes place in this Megillah. So right in the first pasuk, Mordechai and Esther, they poured it on. Right, the Kisvei HaKodesh, it comes to be moral, I guess. It's Baruch HaKodesh Nemro. But the Ruach HaKodesh was megalat us in the first pasuk. In the very first pasuk. Who he was. Oh, what's the first story we have about him? The first story, when they say Hu Achashverosh Hu Berishon with Kilosa Vatzayfei, what was the party B'Shnas Sholosh LeMolchai? What was he celebrating? What was he celebrating? So Chazal tell us he was celebrating that he felt that the Beis Hamikdash would never be restored. The Neviim were understood to be emissaries of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And the Novi had said that in 70 years the Jews would be redeemed. So Achashverosh had his calculation of the 70 years, and it didn't happen. So we said it's not going to happen. He's not the first one. Belshazzar also had his cheshbon of the 70 years. But nevertheless, a little amount of hubris could lead him to conclude that he understood, he had the right pshat. Belshazzar didn't have the right pshat, but he had the right pshat. So, it means the Jews have been so sinful that the Almighty, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, is not going to redeem them. So he's celebrating the destruction of the final destruction, as it were, of the Beis HaMikdash. He takes out the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash to use them. Violates the Hegdash of the Mikdash. He makes a licentious party to be Machti Klal Yisrael. So this is the introduction to the Sefer. We're told, Hu Achashverosh, Hu Berishon, Mitchilosu V'Atzofa. At the very beginning, we note already three major things that he's done improper. The Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, the licentiousness of the party, and celebrating the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He's going to be compounded. Now he's going to murder Vashti too. Not a very nice picture. But that's what Chazal tells us. Hu Achashverosh. The riches that you see at the beginning, that's manifest throughout. Just look carefully. But it's there. This is Achashverosh. The elements that we see right at the beginning, are going to play themselves out over the Megillah, over the course of the Megillah. One of my favorite topics of inquiry is the dispute between Mordechai and Esther about how to deal with Ahasuerus. What are we supposed to do? So Esther tells him, "Kol avdei ha-melech v'amedina is ha-melech yoidim, asher kol ish v'isho asher yevo al-melech l'chotzer ha-pnimis, asher lo yikorei is achas dosu l'homas. And she'en z'vanin lo l'kreisi lo v'al-melech shlo yishim yoyim." And what does Mordechai tell her? He gives her a blistering answer. Al tidami v'nafshech, don't imagine l'imolit beis ha-melech mikol ha-yehudim. And he pours it on. Yemachareish tacharish ilayis kozois. And you're gone. What do you think you were brought there if not for this hour? So I ask always one of my favorite questions in the Megillah. Let's look at this from a purely a business standpoint. We'll convene a council of successful businessmen, and we need a business decision. And we have two proposals. We have Mordechai's proposal, right? Esther, that's it, roll the dice, rush in there, deal with the issue. Well, and if Ahasuerus doesn't like it, he'll kill her. And that's the end of any salvation, possibility of salvation. Or Esther's approach, Esther told him, listen, what do I have to get killed for? If I go and I don't succeed, there's always tomorrow. There's the day after tomorrow. I can try in many ways till I succeed. But if I roll the dice and I get killed, so that's the end of it. So what's the sense? And she said, furthermore, there's not likely to be much of a delay. Why does she tell him that? Because Chazal say, he was unlikely to restrain himself more than 30 days after. So that means the call's going to come pretty quickly. So what are we rushing it for? Another day, two, three, four, how long is it going to be? It's going to be pretty soon. Ahasuerus is going to call for me. So what's your haste? So I ask people all the time, from a business standpoint, who was right, Mordechai or Esther? Esther was clearly right. Pure, simple, common sense, logic, cold business logic. Esther was right. You don't go about this the way Mordechai wanted to go about it. You roll the dice, take one chance, and if you lose that chance, it's all over. For what reason? The Gezeirah wasn't coming now. The Gezeirah was 11 months away, so it'll be Achron Shal Pesach before she'll go to see him instead of the first day of Pesach. This is the big problem. So what did Mordechai want? You know, some want to suggest you have to ameliorate Xerah as soon as it comes. I don't know, first of all, I don't know where they take it from. And secondly, even if you hold such a thing, but you don't roll the dice in such a heavy way and throw away any further opportunities to be Matzah Klal Yisrael because you're in a hurry. When you go, you'll wait a few days and things will fall into place on their own. So here's where we come. We combine the elements, these elements that we talked about. Ahasuerus was a hamoilech, and he lived, as I said, in counter-revolutionary times. He lived in great fear of what conspiracy is going to arise tomorrow. And you can never be secure in his situation. So you have the best armed guards around you, and nobody can penetrate the defensive perimeter around you. Very nice. And who killed Anwar Sadat and who killed Nehru? Their own bodyguards. So that's very nice. You locked out the whole world, but you're surrounded by armed men. So all someone has, either one of them gets it in his head, or someone penetrates them from outside and pays them off in some fashion, and they do you in. So you're never secure. You're always looking over your shoulder. Who's coming after you? And Achashverosh was. So, the debate between Mordechai and Esther. Esther was the rational approach to the problem. There's no question about it. That's the absolutely correct business-like approach to how to deal with this problem. We're all back Esther's approach. It was business, back it all the way. But Mordechai's perspective was also rooted in logic, but he said, you don't understand Achashverosh well enough. Achashverosh, who Achashverosh? Who berishoso metchiloso vatsoifo? That's what he is. He's an evil man who hates Klal Yisrael, and you're not going to dissuade him from exterminating the Jewish people. One way or the other, he's going to carry it out. He'll dodge your requests, he'll say he can't, he'll tell it to you straight, but he's not going to give in to you. There's no hope for that. That's forlorn. You'll never succeed in that fashion. You have to succeed in a different fashion, and that is to tap into the rashness and the irrational responses of Achashverosh. That's what you need to do. If you're dependent on rational approaches, logic's not getting you anyplace. So what is Mordechai's plan? Everything Achashverosh did is the plan of Mordechai. What does Mordechai tell her? When you cross the threshold to enter the king's chambers, so what is the king going to think? Why are you entering? You're a sane person. If you enter and the king doesn't like why you entered, you get killed. So what would prompt you to cross that threshold uninvited? It must be that you have something of such import to the king, so significant that when the king hears, he's going to be thrilled that you came. So the mere fact that she stepped over the threshold, she entered the king's chamber, told Achashverosh that she has something of the utmost importance to you. That means basically he suspected who's after his head now. She or her people acquired information and she's coming to share it with him to save his neck. He doesn't think, he gives him a kind of dream that she's coming to ask for something for herself. No rational person would do that. So now he knows in his mind that she's coming to tell him something that he needs to know. So what does she tell him? What does she tell him? He tells him, Aloch Esther Malkol Mabakosh Sechat Chatzia Malchus V'Inos and Loch. He's willing to pay off heavily to find out what she wants, what she knows. So what does she tell him? I prepared a party for the king in Haman. Please come. Now the Melech's not going to knock her head off now because the Melech, she knows something I need to know. So she has him over the barrel. And now she just upped the ante on him because she told him who's coming to this party. It's a threesome. You and me and Haman. And why does she invite Haman? So the Gemara and Megillus has 9 different reasons. And Eliyahu Novi said they were all true. And some of them were that she should think that Esther and Haman were in cahoots somehow. There was some conspiracy which would affect him negatively at some level. So now that she's making a party and she invited Haman, he doesn't even know now if Esther's not part of the conspiracy or conspiracy against him. She on his side bringing him information? Is she conspiring against him? No idea. Comes to the party, and again he tells her, we'll give her whatever she wants. So what does she answer him again? Come tomorrow. I made another party for you and me and Haman tomorrow. Now Achashverosh could wonder, is he going to survive that party? They're going to kill him? Who knows what's going to happen to him there? What's out there? Achashverosh is jumping out of his skin. He had no idea where he's holding. Who's with him? Who's against him? What's happening? Everything is confused. Is it Mibayis from in the house from the queen? Is it Michutz? Other murky. No idea. So what does Achashverosh do? Achashverosh decides that he probably didn't pay off well enough. If you want to stay in his business, you have to have a good secret police. And how did the secret police get information? From informants. Informants you have to pay. And there are people that really belong to the other side, but for their own benefit, and whatever benefit you can provide them, but for their own benefit, they're willing to be double agents and be disloyal to their own group. So they sit amongst those who plot. They're aware of conspiracies, and they report to the secret police. So the secret police break them up, eliminate the conspirators, and the king goes on. But what happens if you don't pay off? If you don't pay off, you're in deep trouble. Because why should a guy who has information betray his comrades? And he's not going to gain anything by it. He's putting his life in danger. If his comrade knows he's betrayed them, they'll kill him. And the king's not giving him anything. So why should I go tell the king? If the king pays him off handsomely in whatever way, so fine, it's worth more being on the king's side. Even clandestinely, but it's worth more. But if the king doesn't pay off, so that's, no one's going to put their neck out to help him. For what reason? So Ahasuerus has this deep fear that he didn't pay someone off. And that's why there's things going on out there. And no one has come to tell him what's happening. So he brings that they should read. Right, the beginning of the sixth parak of the Megillah. A sefer zichronos divrei hayomim. What has happened? It's all the affairs of state that have taken place around the Achashverosh for years. And they discover that indeed there was a plot against his life. And ultimately a very dangerous plot. Because it came from his own bodyguards. The ones that the only ones that had access to him that could actually do him in. So this was a very dangerous plot. And it was uncovered by Mordechai, and he didn't pay him off. So, inevitably, people in Shushan knew that Mordechai wasn't paid off. So the word spread. This guy, whatever, this was probably the worst threat against his life ever. And Mordechai saved him, and he didn't get paid the guy off. So I'm going to put my neck out to save this guy. So he's alarmed. So what does he do? He sends Haman marching around that day, parading him around Shushan, giving him covered melochim to Mordechai. Why? Because in case there's somebody out there that knows something, they should say, hey, this king actually pays off. Listen, let me go tell him what's going on, you know? But it's today's plot. But nobody comes forward. So he comes blind to the second Suda. There's no idea what's going on. He imagines he could be in great danger, but he doesn't know. And apparently Esther knows something that he doesn't know, but he doesn't know what it is. So he comes to the second party. So here he is, he's already climbing the walls. And then Esther tells him that there's someone here that wants to kill me and my people. Ahasuerus liked the queen. I want to kill you? And he goes nuts. So Vamelech komba chamosum emishti ayayin, agina sabisan. He runs out to try to calm down. He realizes he's losing it. Comes back in. Vahom noifel alamito asher Esther aleh. Looks like he wants to abuse the queen. Achashverosh doesn't need any yoyetzim now. He doesn't need any trials now. Achas dos alahomas, put him to death. This is what Mordechai played for. He played. How it would play out, he didn't know. The Rabbeinu Shalom is Belailo, know the Dosh. He only knew one thing. He has to endeavor to get on the Achashverosh's skin and make him nuts. And then we must follow that in that state he should do something irrational. Because in a rational sense, it will not. Hell no, he had no idea how it's going to play out. He rolled the dice. But he rolled the dice in a way that he stood a chance to succeed. He needed tremendous siyata d'shmaya, the tefillos, and the tshuva to succeed. But he had a plan. He was not clueless. He was not rushing into something with haste. His plan necessitated this type of action to produce the effect that he wanted. And min ha-shamayim b'zoicha, he produced the effect. Ahasuerus was jumping out of his skin. And then he lost it. And when he lost it, it's like, but a party, well, you know, he asked no questions anymore. Vashti's off with Vashti's head, off with Haman's head. That's it, you know. No questions asked. So this is the very beginning of the Megillah. They tell us Hamoylech. He was insecure in his position, and with good reason. And he feared for his life. He wasn't paranoid. There were plots out there constantly. So this bedeviled him. This bedeviled him. And the Perek Aleph teaches us how rash he was. He could make decisions which hurt him deeply, hurt his position deeply, without thought or the cunning of how to do this in a subtle fashion to get his way. And this is, so those elements, that's what Mordechai used. Mordechai understood the personality of Ahasuerus, the troubles of Ahasuerus, what was on his mind. And this is what he used to do him in. So this is already merumas at the very beginning of the, as soon as the Haggadah, as the Megillah opens, Apiruach HaKodesh, they put in the elements. Who was Ahasuerus? Who was the Rosha? The Rosha that you meet in Perek Aleph. Everything in this Megillah is about his rishus. There was nothing. He wasn't deceived, and he didn't care, and he wanted to murder the Jews. All nine yards. And what's going to define the denouement of the story? The denouement of the story is the Hamoylech. He had reason to be insecure in his position. And Bixen and Seresh, there are plots we see as it plays out. There are plots against them. And finally, how rash he was. And he kills Vashti. These are the elements which will define central portions of this Megillah. The most critical aspect in the Megillah. Ahasuerus' turning on Haman is defined by the opening psukim of the Megillah. Of what is taking place. Perek Aleph. Vayehi b'mei Ahasuerus. The beginning, the introduction, tells us the story. We'll see the threads, how they're going to play out over the years, over a long, many years' time. Many years' time. Right? The Purim story is in the 12th year of Ahasuerus, 9 years after the Suda. But these elements, they continue to exist. And in one moment, they will burst forth. And with that will burst forth the Yeshua of Klal Yisrael. So this is one aspect of the Megillah. Another aspect of the Megillah is also introduced to us in Perek Aleph. And that is, there was, from Ahasuerus' standpoint, a special sin, a special hatred of Klal Yisrael. when he felt that he had finally defeated the Beis HaMikdash and their aspirations to rebuild it, this was unmitigated joy. And he starts his celebration of the downfall of the Jews. This is to be celebrated. Not celebrating anyone else's downfall. He's celebrating the downfall of the Jews. His appointment, Gidal HaMelech Haman. Haman was certainly a very suitable candidate from Ahasuerus' standpoint. Son of Yisrael Kamaisa. If Ahasuerus had it in his blood to celebrate the downfall of the Jews, so could there be a better prime minister than Haman? From Amalek, who hated the Jews with a passion? Whose people hated the Jews with a passion? And it certainly didn't take too much to arouse Haman to kill all the Jews. That's a story in its own right. There is a posik, it's a phenomenal posik. It always caught my eye, and the Vilna Gaon really expounds upon it. I mean, I had thought that that should be, there's a good shot in the posik, but I found that the Vilna Gaon takes this approach. After Haman is appointed, Vayar Haman ki in Mordechai koreyo mishtachav alo, vayimolei Haman chemo. He became angry. Okay, that we understand. He felt slighted by Mordechai. Okay, that I understand. Vayivah, what is the shot in the next posik? Vayivah's be'inov posik zayin. Posik vav, rather. Vayivah's be'inov the shloyach yod b'mordechai levado ki yigidu lo es am Mordechai. What is the Pasuk saying? Just translate it. Like, just put it into a rational sentence. It was humiliating in his eyes to just take out Mordechai, because they told him the nation of Mordechai. What does that mean? So, what the Vilna Gaon says, directly, Haman hated Mordechai. Now, to take care of Mordechai was a very small problem for him. He just would have sent a few of his goons in the middle of the night, and they would find Mordechai and finish him off, and that's how life would go on. End of story. Very simple. And that's it. Nothing would ever be done of it. It happened, you know, by the Haman's thugs and finished. End of story. No one's eyebrows would be raised. Meisim b'chol yom in such an empire. But Haman wanted, as in the words of Chazal, it was Oysa Masa Zimri, in effect, but he was Mavakshim Tzchak Pinchas. He wanted to use his power in a self-serving fashion, but he wanted to have a reputation as being a dedicated public servant, that he only acted, never in his narrow parochial interest, only for the benefit of the Malucha. That's the only way he would act. So, what does he look? He says, if I'll get involved with killing Mordechai himself, so people will find out about you eventually that Haman killed him. Why did he take Mordechai out? Because Mordechai slighted him. So this is personal revenge. Those who are derech, you know, I'm not. That's not the way to run my office. But they told him, ki yigidu lo es am Mordechai. Oh, the Jews. Now, by Amalek didn't take much to arouse them against the Jews. And the Jews are hated. The king hates them. They're mafuzan referred bin amim. They're not liked. No one's going to take up for them. So Haman had a new plan now. Why bother to take out just Mordechai himself? A golden opportunity. He'll take out all the Jews too. And based on his heritage, this was always a very good idea. It didn't need much prompting. And now he's going to say that why was Mordechai killed? Mordechai was killed in a general campaign against the king's enemies. These are people, they're a fifth column in the society. They breed social problems around them. That's it. We need an empire without them. So Mordechai, so Haman wraps himself in the flag. He's pursuing the king's interests. And in Haman's scale of values, it's fine. It'll kill millions of people just to kill one guy. The real guy is after is Mordechai. But he doesn't need much encouragement as an Amaleki to go against the Jews. Ooh, Mordechai is a Yehudi. What a golden opportunity. I could wipe off the Jews, wipe off Haman, and do it all. L'shem Shamayim, l'shem the Melech. What a noble public servant. So Achashverosh picked someone that was predisposed to despise Klal Yisrael. And when he had difficulties with one Jew, this is enough reason to arouse the latent enmity within him against all the Jews, because it served his purposes. So we start with Achashverosh, a son of Yisrael, celebrating the downfall of Yerushalayim. So who's to be surprised after that? Gid al HaMelech HaChashverosh HaMa Ben HaMadosa, or Gogi, Vayin HaSayu. It's a perfect fit for what he needs. You know, one of the, it's an extra, you know, you send a resume, you know, so you have all the basic requirements, and then you put down, you know, related experiences on the bottom, you know. So on the resume he had, I'm a Amaleki, you know, full-fledged Sayyidina Yisrael, you know, part of the services, you know, that I can provide. So this Fachas Reirish, this was the cherry on top of the cake, on the ice cream, on the sundae. You know, what could be better than this? As a Sayyidina Yisrael, to head the Malucha, you know. Gvaldik, wonderful. So now when Haman comes, and he comes to Achashverosh could have made an enormous amount of money. Haman and his people are willing to pay off. Aseres alofim kikar kesef. It's an enormous amount of money. And what's Achashverosh's response? Kesef nasun loch. You don't have to pay me off to do this job. You want to bribe me, you know, to sign off on something that I might not necessarily sign off on. No bribe necessary. Keep your money. What did Chazal say? Chazal say, this is the story. It's a Meis and Toz Yeshiva what happened, actually. There was someone that had a tell. He had a huge heap of earth, and he wanted to level his land off. And he had a neighbor who had a deep gully right next door. So the Bala tell goes to the Bala Haritz and said, listen, I got to get rid of this dirt. I'll pay you to get rid of it. So what does the Bala Haritz say? Pay you? Just dump the dirt in. That's the best I could do. It's phenomenal for me. Just fill in the gully. I'll have flat land now. So this is Haman and Achashverosh. This happened in Toz Yeshiva. They had a deep gully, and the state was making a road, and they had tons of earth that they had to get rid of. So they came to the yeshiva. They'll pay them off to dump the dirt into their property and fill in the land. So the yeshiva duly accepted the money and accepted the earth, you know. Best thing for them. So this is what the Gemara says. This is the Bala Tel and the Bala Haritz that met each other. Achashverosh said, no charge. You're on my agenda. So this were introduced to this at the very beginning of the Megillah, the Sinas Yisrael of Achashverosh. I would say it's not by chance that he chose Haman, and that's what Haman was the right fit. For the things that he wanted to do, Haman was the right fit. And one of the main things he wanted to do was Sinas Yisrael, to persecute the Jews. So this was a phenomenal fit. And Haman's insight that Bufuzer Mefered ben Haman plays a critical role in two other incidents in the Megillah. Two other incidents in the Megillah play out from this. The Jews wage war against Haman's henchmen on the 13th day of Adar. At the end of the 13th day of Adar, Esther comes and informs Ahasuerus everything that's happened that day. And then she makes two requests of Ahasuerus. One, I understand that Haman's henchmen are deeply entrenched in the capital city. This is a base of power, and he stocked it with tons of his, you know, people. So we need another day to eliminate, you know, Haman's people from the bureaucracy. So, fine, granted. Then she asked a very strange request. They hung them already the first day. So what did she ask? As the world says, capital punishment can only be administered once. So what did she want? What she wanted was the following. Esther was dreadfully afraid that Haman's henchmen would seek vengeance. And the Jews are truly Mefuzer and Mefered ben Haman. We cannot in a position to defend ourselves. We're spread out a little here, a little there, a little elsewhere. We're not concentrated in one place that we can make a collective defense. So how are we going to survive this? We did what we had to do, but how are we going to survive this? So Esther came to the following conclusion. There will be a question in society, who killed the 10 sons of Haman? Now remember, this is not a democracy. Everything is opaque and nothing is transparent. Who killed them? Well, was the king behind this, what happened today? That's one possibility. Another possibility is that someone that had suffered at Haman's hands was personal vengeance, so he struck and killed all his children. Or there's yet a third possibility, and that is that it was a political strike, not a personal strike, but a political strike against Haman. And, you know, in these societies, there are always competing groups that are jockeying for advantages and power in the structure of how the society actually works. So maybe some competing group came, and this was, in effect, a terrorist attack. They took Haman's family out. So no one knows who it is. So Esther wanted it to be clear that the king stood behind this. It was neither personal vengeance nor political vengeance. Now, how do you determine if the king is behind it? There's one very simple way. Ultimately, if someone's committed enough, they could kill almost anyone in this world, if you're committed enough to getting it done. But there's one thing that you can't do. So you could strike them and kill them and hang them in the capital city. You can do that also. But what's the next thing that you do? You run for your life. You disappear before the security forces get after you, and that's the end of you. Now, if what took place was against the wishes of the king, what will happen next? They'll cut them down, that's it, they'll wash the streets, and it will never have happened. That's it, it will become a forgotten incident. The king doesn't need on his watch that there was a terrorist strike in the heart of the capital city and they took out the prime minister's 10 sons and killed and hung them up. This does not speak well of a king of being well in control. So they cut him down. Who's the only one that could leave them hanging in the capital city? Only the king. It's only if he consents will his security forces allow it to take place. So, but the fact that she allowed them, she said, I want them to hang. And everyone will see the hanging for 24 hours after it happened, so that it will make apparent that the king is behind that which took place. The king is behind all of this, because otherwise it couldn't be. And what did she want? She wanted that the son of Yisrael should not be so quick to react. because if they're going to react, the king is now on the side of the Jews. However, that miraculously happened, but he is. And if you start in with them, now you're starting in with the king. You're not on the king's side, you're against the king now. You're on the wrong side of history. And it may cost you your life. She gave them pause. And this was the motivation of Mordechai. What does Mordechai become, the prime minister? Because Mordechai had the same concern. We're Mefuzer or Mefayrad ben Amon. How are we going to survive? But Esther took the first step, but that's only the first step. What's the next step that's needed? The next step that's needed is for Mordechai to take control of the bureaucracy. Mordechai is the prime minister. Everyone on the king's payroll is now beholden to him and has to answer to him. And now he can use the bureaucracy, which is under his thumb, to defend the Jews. If you're going to start in with them, you're going to be fighting the king's bureaucracy. And that does not augur well for you if you wind up against the king's bureaucracy. So not only is the king on his side, but the manpower and the means throughout the empire of carrying out the king's will is not in the hands of someone like Haman anymore. It's in the hands of Mordechai, someone that has the best interests of the Jews in mind. It is going to undertake to defend them. And that's why Mordechai entered. He did this very strange thing. A godel in Sanhedrin leaves to the Beis Medrash and starts spending his time in what? In the prime minister's office. A very strange thing. But this followed through because Klal Yisrael is Mefuzer Mefayrad ben Amon. Haman was right. How are we going to deal with the problem that Yaakov Avinu raised? The heart of Moshe Avishenu v'Yoshua Yoretz. And they'll strike back. And then what are we going to do? So Mordechai also followed through on this. Haman seized it at the beginning to allow him to have the enmity against all the Klal Yisrael because they're Mefuzer and Mefayrad and despised. And Achashverosh is ready to accept it on that reason. Esther and Mordechai both used that same factor and acted upon that factor of Mefuzer Mefayrad ben Amon to strengthen the position of Klal Yisrael in Bavel. And strengthen it they did. The Jewish community in Bavel existed from then for 2,500 years. Right? Till the fall of the Shah of Iran. The Jewish community exists 2,500 years in Iran, Persia. They understood full well how to protect Klal Yisrael. And most of Klal Yisrael did not return for the Bayis Sheni. Most of Klal Yisrael sat in Bavel. So this was the seat of Jewry for 2,500 years, hence. It was the seat of Jewry for 1,500 years after this. And the community lived another 1,000 years afterwards. So the methods that they used were ones which historically are borne out as having been successful. That a community of Jews lived there for 2,500 years. So there's a little bit of a perspective on some of the incidents in the Megillah, Rabbi Yisrael.